Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a podcast that for 100 years has fought the evils of outer space. I'm your host, Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
And we're here to talk about Nostalgia Pilots episode 35, The Return of Wu Fei.
Wu Fei!
And a round of applause? Other people too. Yeah, how did he get, like, top billing?
Well, he did kick a lot of ass.
That is very true. And he also defined his own, what did he say? Oh, he defined his own
integrity.
Yes, thank you. He defined his own integrity.
I really want to see what they said in the dub, because I don't think it necessarily matches what is in the sub.
No, in the dub, he does say he defines his own integrity, because I watched it. I watched the dub.
The subtitle, if I recall correctly, is "I'll define my own justice," which is terrifying in and of itself.
It's a lot more about justice than it is integrity. And it's specifically like his master, who I really want to get into with you guys, because what kind of voice did they have in the dub?
In the dub, they had a weird fake Chinese accent.
But it was like, was it
male or female?
It was male. I'll put it to you this way. He could have been the fourth chipmunk from Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Because in the sub, that is Wu Fei's murder grandma. And she literally tells him, don't worry whether or not the people you are fighting are good or evil. They're evil because you're fighting them. And I'm like, lady, you are giving Wu Fei way too much power.
See, I was confused by that exchange because you cannot defeat your enemy. You must defeat yourself. And that is how you'll get victory. And then a lot of stuff about integrity and destiny. And I'm sitting here going, so he has to defend his integrity, but things later on in the plot made more sense to me with that whole scene.
Well, I think what it basically boils down to is he was having mech-focused erectile dysfunction, and he had to beat himself to get it up again.
Well, it's Wu Fei's constant problem, which is that he can't defeat anyone weaker than him. But then they're just robots, so it's fine.
Unless you can win against yourself, Wu Fei, you will never defeat your enemy.
It's like a Saturday morning cartoon censor board. Like, if it's robots, it's fine. That's not really murder.
Robot violence is fine.
Thank you for reminding me of the Wu Fei that can only fight people stronger than him.
Oh, I do like that we open with Sad Troa in the rain.
Yeah, that's literally what I put down as Sad Troa walking in the rain, reminds me of tragic things. And you only barely get a sense that he has amnesia.
I have a question. How long has he been walking alone in the streets?
That was my question. Not even the streets, just countries. Like, how has he traversed entire nations?
Well, no, he's in a colony in the rain, so I don't know how that one works.
Hey, maybe they have their own rainmaker. They've got a geostorm system to control the weather.
He's in the sprinklers.
Hold on though, because we did skip the opening narration, which I do want to touch on just quickly, because it's basically the instructional video for the Zero system, which I found hilarious. Like, we bought a pop-up camper trailer this summer, and I felt like someone slammed in a VHS tape. And I was like, welcome to the Zero system. This will turn you into a murder machine. Step one. Like, anyway, it was quite a nice little breakdown of what was going on, especially in light of what happens to Zex later in the episode. Mm-hmm. But without that, the cold open on Troa, like, I don't know how they would have got back to Zex's ball tripping later on.
That is a good point.
Yeah, so we do see Troa having all the sad emotions.
Vaguely remembering battles that he was in. And then all of a sudden, Catherine's there.
Yeah, he randomly runs into, like, the one person on Earth that he knows.
Yeah.
I have a problem with the way she goes about addressing his obvious anime amnesia. Because they were definitely kind of together before. And so now she's like, you're my brother.
Yeah. I think that's
a little awkward.
It's less awkward than, hey, I used to be your lover. You know, it puts him at ease and makes him feel safe. Maybe she doesn't have romantic feelings for him anymore.
But I mean, he's the emo Japanese boy band character. Of course she still has feelings for him.
They always played it like maybe, but at the same time, she's always filled that like hot older sister trope of Japan, which is
also in and terrible. Of itself
not great.
Like, no. What I constantly remember of her is her making food for Troa and Hiro. That's what I remember.
Yeah, she constantly gives food. She does random circus things and like gives kind of random older sistery advice.
Mm-hmm. And throws knives at him.
Which he's not paid to dodge.
No. But we do cut from his sad face to Wufei training, or at the very least, taking a bunch of people to school.
I mean, if he's that good, you figure they would have been all going at him at once to try to even the odds.
Well, who are they training? Are they training each other, or are they training him?
Well, from the way the master talks, he came there to get better and train because he was having his mech erectile dysfunction. Like he needed to beat up poor students to get his mojo back.
Can I not call it mech ED? Because that just makes me uncomfortable.
But that's what it is.
Is it not explained more that he's waiting for Ataku, is that right?
Nataku.
Nataku. Yeah. To be completed, essentially. Although, again, how does Gundam technology just fall into the hands of, I don't know, a random suicide cult? Like, what is going on here?
Well, no, this is Wufei's clan, I guess. Because we're in the one colony that's, like, super Chinese, and they've got, like, a Chinese gate and a temple and everything.
Fair.
And like a pond.
And I'm glad you brought up the suicide pact cult thing, because the way this whole situation ends with the attack of the mobile suits, and he gets Nataku and he fights them, and then they try to hold the colony hostage, and the colony just straight up goes, I don't even know if it's the whole colony. All I know is that the teacher and her students are like, we're out, deuces, and blow up the whole colony. What about the innocent kids?
Like, I was thinking the same thing.
There's a whole bunch of like high-rise buildings in this colony.
What about that guy? Yeah, what about that guy that traveled there on a business trip?
Well, not only that, like, if these were the people who were supposed to be the spiritual or philosophical leaders for Wufei, like, this dude is not learning, because he is hyper-aggressive, where they're like, no, we're so non-aggressive, we're going to blow ourselves up rather than fight. And then they're like, it'll be fine, Wufei's still out there, boom.
Well, I don't think it's so much that they'll blow themselves up instead of fighting, it's we'd rather blow ourselves up than be a hostage.
Well, yeah, and that was going with him remembering his integrity. His integrity would have made him surrender because his clan would have been captured, and so his clan took that scenario out of the enemy's hands, so he didn't have to compromise his integrity in order to keep fighting.
Even when they're walking, she's like, we're gonna die like really soon. Like, and that's not really like explained if their colony's like damaged or what's going on, but she's just like, we're gonna be dead.
And also, you don't see any other people. So no. Do you think outside of the students and the master?
No, there's like a setup shot of the of the skyscrapers and whatnot, and you see people in business suits.
So
we get a skyline. I don't know if we get any people.
I distinctly remember seeing people, and they were in business suits.
So my thing is, like, if that's the case, then are all of them members of the clan, or did they just take it upon themselves to blow up this colony?
Maybe the clan is the ruling class of the colony?
Yeah, I think they made a decision. And so I think Wufei comes by some of his let's kill everybody, honestly. But one thing she says that I think is really awesome is she's like, for 100 years, we have fought the evils of outer space. And we don't know what that means, because she doesn't elaborate. I'm really hoping it was aliens.
Well, Wufei later echoes the line, right? Like, he says, I too am fighting the evils of outer space, yes, or whatever.
Yeah, and that's when because he declares Zex an enemy he must defeat or something.
Oh, that whole exchange, but we're getting... Okay, I just want to touch on another... I want to touch on a minor point. Speaking of the integrity of combat, I love the design of the mobile dolls, but when they're in jet mode, those legs look so go-body.
I love how right when that happened, your microphone went into echo mode.
Yeah.
So it's like, the mobile dolls.
Oh, I apologize.
It was weird, but awesome.
It worked. I also like that Ultron has a tail laser.
Yeah.
Although he did not break out both dragon arms in this episode.
No, we just see the one so far.
Maybe the other one is more powerful, and so he's holding back.
Well, the other one was holding the shield.
Ah.
Yeah, and using his weird little trident staff. I'm still stuck on this whole, like, this colony thing. Like, this is the first time we've seen a colony, like, because remember, they've used this tactic before. And I think each time a Gundam pilot has said, ah, fuck it. Like, yeah. I think, because, like, they did it one time and it was Catra. And he was like, ah, screw it. Double beam rifle. I'm gonna blow this whole place up. And then in this one, before Wufei could say, ah, fuck it, his clan said, ah, fuck it, and blew the whole place up.
Wait, was it Catra who blew things up, or was it his dad? I think his dad was the one who...
His dad blew himself up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
his dad blew
himself Catra, up. Okay. Remember,
and then Catra went crazy, and like he went into a colony that was like empty, and he blew it up.
Gotcha.
Oh, hey, did you guys catch the scene of the sad Ferris wheel?
Yes. The very beginning, and I was like, why is there a Ferris wheel? Is he in an abandoned amusement park?
I could... Oh, the
Where
first
is Scooby-Doo?
The first thing that came to my mind was Catra. I was like, hey, it's the reason why Catra blew up that space station. Because he had
people in space don't need Ferris wheels. They have zero gravity.
That was the first thing I thought of. I really don't know what anyone is planning at all. Like, I still don't know what Hero wants or what he's planning. I don't know what Trace was planning. Like, even Hero voices his doubts. He's like, why did Trace give me this thing? Like, what was he thinking? And then Zex is out in space having a freak out using this freaking psycho robot.
Well, Catra clearly wants to get back to... Wait, back to Sandrock? How does that even work after? Anyway, wait for me, my dear Sandrock. I'll be there shortly, which another kind of odd relationship between man and robot.
So we do see him walking in the desert, like with his like cloak and his staff over like these dunes, because there are no roads in the desert, as we've established.
And he got shot down in his jet.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. He got shot down and he's on the ground, and then he stands up and he like takes off his parachute that he did not use.
I guess they just showed you him with the open parachute to just so they wouldn't have to draw him ejecting. It was a budget thing.
They imply he has a parachute, but we do get a beautiful shot of that jet blowing up, and he is not in it.
But he's also not fluttering down in the ejector seat. Because you figure if he was, those mobile suits would have just shot him as he floated gingerly to the ground.
But we are skipping something I do want to talk about, because we do have Zex and Master Roshi on the Peace Million, like, talking about recruiting the Gundam pilots.
Yeah.
And he's,
I always,
like,
call Master Roshi Professor Surfer Dude.
Yeah, you know who he looks like to me? He looks like Dave Robinson.
He does.
I need Dave Robinson to cosplay him so bad now. Like, you just, like, it has to be done. Like, he needs a Hawaiian shirt, and, like, he needs to spike out, like, some like a little wig on the sides of his head. Like, he
could make it happen.
The little glasses, little sunglasses. But, like, in that speech, the camera's moving around, and there's, like, it starts out, like, tight on Zex and pulls back, and there's, like, a good 2 or 3 seconds where we're only seeing his goatee. It's, like, so huge and sharp.
Like, what is Zex's plan? Because, like, he's just traveling around in this very noticeable ship from disaster to disaster. Like,
yeah, they're warriors, so all they can do is fight, but they can't plan where they're going, I guess.
Okay, well, here's my understanding at this point, because actually this episode was the one that to me kind of brought it all together. And part of it was Relena's little peace council. Although clearly not knowing where they're going isn't a problem, because despite the fact that Relena has no idea how peace is going to work out for everybody, she's happy to promise it around left and right and only consider, oh, Pagan, should I have done that? Considering I have no idea how to actually bring about peace.
Well,
anyhow,
she's 16 and they're all grown ass adult men, so that's on them.
But I do like how they all come to her whining, going, Relena, the Rumfellers didn't do what they said they were gonna do.
Because the Rumfellers are,
they're
like,
charging us lots of money. Yeah,
they're taking all the money from Earth to build a giant ass spaceship.
Help us, Relena, help us. And she kind of gives them the, she's like, yeah, I'll help you. And in the back of her mind, you can almost hear her saying, I fucking told you so.
She's like, I still have no idea how to do this, but it'll work out. And then she's like, what should I do, Pagan? And Pagan's just like, well, Dermail's an idiot, so you'll be fine.
but then
we're
gonna
blow it all on some ridiculous pork barrel project for space.
Yeah. Then we hard cut though to democratically elected Captain Noyne, who is insisting to the little working class soldiers, no, we're all equal here. We're all equal here, but can I call you Captain Noyne anyway?
Sure.
Yeah, no, the thing I like about that scene is she's like, you can call me Captain, but we're all democratically, like, it's fine. And they're all like, we're not a military unit. And they're like, yes, ma'am. And they salute.
And then she discussed how, well, we're about to be invaded. And this is what I was saying about the plot feeling like it's coming together. Mm-hmm. Sand Kingdom's on the cusp of invasion. You know, you can tell because there's a bunch of little red arrows pointing directly towards their borders.
And we got a map of the Sand Kingdom.
Yeah, that was
we
also.
We know where the Sand Kingdom is.
Switzerland.
No, it's Greece.
Oh, you're right, yes. Which, to me, it seems odd, because wasn't Trey's rose water bathing it in the Parthenon earlier, but
well, he just had that moved to Luxembourg apparently. But yeah, like the way the capital is situated and like that map of Greece, like Saint Kingdom City or whatever is Thessaloniki.
Ah, so okay, not to give the show too much credit, but do you think they're trying to get at sort of the roots of democracy and the roots of, well, to some extent, philosophy, I guess.
If they were going to do that, they could have put it in Athens, but they put it in the capital city of Alexander the Great, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting, I wouldn't say commentary necessarily, but interesting point towards their viewpoint on war and the constant,
So the sort of the idea that war leads to peace.
Yeah, or that you've got to keep fighting and never hesitate, Wu Fei, because that'll just lead to more fighting. So keep fighting.
Or
wait,
against alcoholism and depression when you're 30.
And against yourself. Remember, if you hesitate, it'll create another battle against yourself. And when you fight yourself, if you can't defeat yourself, you obviously can't pilot your mech.
Murder Grandma is basically like a fortune cookie factory. She's just constantly dispensing advice.
Yeah. So Wufei eventually murders his way to Zex.
Yep.
And Zex is like, we should team up. And
Wufei's like, fight me first.
Wufei's like, no, you're Zex Marquis. You literally work for us.
All evil that chooses to fight in outer space is my enemy.
Does that like, not well, make I used him to, evil but... himself?
Yeah, so Zex's plan to put the helmet back together backfires here.
But it's my mask.
Fighting his own brand.
And they fight so that Wufei can convince them to team up in classic Marvel style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like that somehow. It would be, well, it is such nonsense to have it come down to how can I convince you? You'll have to fight me. But for Wufei, everyone's like, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, okay, fine. That's exactly how they would be convinced.
Well, it's fight me and defeat me.
Because again, it all, look, it's coming full circle. Wufei cannot fight and or be friends with people weaker than him.
At the same time, I'm pretty sure this is how Wufei decides what to get on his pizza. So, like, I think we should get pineapple on this. Well, you'll have to fight me for it.
Come at me, bro.
You also like pineapple. Why is this a problem?
Come at me, bro.
Dude, I haven't worked off enough calories to substantiate pizza. Now fight me.
Oh, God. Can we just say Wufei's the most aggressive Gundam pilot? Like,
yes.
It's agreed.
He's just all about that life.
This does lead in, though, to one of my increasingly favorite parts of the show, which is the ball tripping sequences.
Yes.
Zex's little freak out is fantastically animated in my mind, especially that shot of the eye in the mask.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of neat orange saturation and just sort of filling the background out with a solid color that, yeah, okay, they're probably saving some money on budget, but it also looks really good.
He sees, like, all of the, he just gets filled with targeting locks even though he's fighting one dude.
See, I think I like the way they animate that because I think it's not that he gets multiple targets, but it's showing him the multiple paths that Wufei could take to either dodge him or attack him. Because Master Roshi also explains that the Zero system is messing with his head because it gives him all the it stops a soldier from being anxious or afraid or doubtful by giving them every possible outcome ever. And that way they can have the confidence to go into battle because they know everything.
It seems very similar to Epion's Oracle type ability to mess with your head. And so that's immediately the correlation that I put. It's like, oh, it's just like Epion. So maybe when they copied, the Wing Zero, they also got that weird trippy head balls thing.
Yeah, no, I thought the exact same thing, and I was thinking about how Trey said the only way to win is to sort of overcome the system, which is exactly what Zex has to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And but he doesn't this time, and he has a couple of visions of his own death, and then he like clips Piecemealion and falls over, and Wufei is just like. Brushes off his shoulder and leaves.
Well, first he thinks he actually destroys the Piecemealion, which one of the fun things about these sequences is that they can do ridiculous stuff where you have to take a moment and think, was that real? And then, of course, they immediately cut back and adjust reality. But
yeah, I did have a moment when he was having the vision of Piecemealion being destroyed. I was like, no, Professor Surfer Dude!
Exactly.
I don't really care about anything else, but if he dies, I'll be very sad.
By the way, who else is piloting that ship? Because all we ever see is Zex and Master Roshi.
Like, it's just like some random dude. like one of his grunts from the boat.
It's all droids and dolls.
They're using dolls to
maintain the ship.
He's the most stressed second in command ever. He's running navigation, piloting, guidance, engineering, everything. But yeah, man, like I do like that they because one of the trademarks of Gundam, and I know Jared, like since you've seen some of the original Mobile Suit Gundam, you'll know they talk about these like lofty ideals and concepts, and you know they a lot of them generate around child soldiers and stuff like that. But I like where they start talking about how to make the better soldier. Like they've already tried to do that originally with training these child soldiers that are the Gundam pilots, and they see that worked sort of. But now that they've gotten rid of the actual soldier and made the mobile dolls, they had to find something better, something to get them closer to the state of the mobile doll. And that's when they made the Zero system, which is supposed to be this thing to eliminate all of a soldier's doubts and fears by literally showing them every outcome so they can master the battlefield. Like, it's an interesting idea.
I was just going to say, given the period, I find it one of the things that's hard to go back to the original series and watch is the sort of emphasis almost on, I think it was supposed to be more evolution and almost like X-Men-y style, but it feels a little bit like eugenics when they discuss the, what are they called again? The specials?
New types.
Yes. Yeah. So you've just got this race of genetically superior beings that, you know, are kind of the crux of the thing. And then in this one, interestingly, so you jump ahead from that sort of weird 70s mindset to this mid 90s situation where, you know, you've got the rise of computers and everything's becoming increasingly automated. And now there's this ongoing discussion about not just automating the mobile suits, but also making a singular better warrior through the Zero system. It's an interesting, you know, it's clear what they're grappling with for the period.
And I think you see that if we ever get to 00, where they're talking about terrorism in like 2006.
That'd be interesting.
And you know what's funny? Like we're talking about this progression, but then you look at Iron Blood Orphans, and Iron Blood Orphans kind of combines 00, Gundam Wing, and Mobile Suit. Because not only is it talking about terrorism, but it's also talking about child soldiers, and it's also talking about like the global fight for resources and kind of countries allying together and not allying together. And like Iron Blood Orphans is a really big melting pot of themes from Gundam, but I feel like it does a pretty good job for the first half of that series.
Yeah, there's a lot of that series that's about like what it's like to be a civilian in a war zone, or like to grow up in a war zone, which is really interesting.
Yeah, that does sound interesting.
And it also talks about the economy of what civilians do in a like in a place where they've only known war. Like you're just not like, well, I'm gonna be a farmer in that type of area.
In this universe, they go to the circus.
Oh God, my poor precious biscuit. But that's another series. So yes, so we do cut back to Troa at the circus
in that ridiculous clown. Yes.
Oh,
and he's just sort of sleepwalking around in his clown outfit.
And why is he holding her trapeze outfit?
I was gonna ask, is that lingerie?
He's out of it, and he doesn't. No, and they're like packing up because they're gonna move on now that she has rescued Troa. Like he's a shelter cat.
But also I love how the ringleader is like, yeah, since you found Troa and I just got one of my connects just told me a Gundam pilot showed up near here. We need to go.
Yeah, he's like, we're moving on.
So soon? Yeah. It's like, how do you not put the two together? I also think it was interesting the clown mask that they end on for Troa, which shows a half mask split down the middle, and the face is almost kind of frowning a little bit.
Yeah.
Like sadness. And I was like, oh, so you wanted to ram that home that he is sad because he doesn't remember things.
I think there's even, if you pause it, I think there's even a tiny tear on the mask. Yeah.
But we saw that mask before, because that was the mask he was wearing when she cut him.
Yeah, it's, you know, if they explore it enough, it would be really interesting to see, like, maybe him having, like, it'd be good if, like, they insinuate that he's starting to gain his memories back, but he's reluctant to admit it because he actually is enjoying a life outside of perpetual war and death. And so he has to grasp and grapple with the concept of either staying in this life and leaving the space war to its own devices, or picking back up the mantle of Troa Barton and the Heavy Arms. Like, I think that'd be really cool if they go into that.
I mean, considering that he would be breaking the cycle of brainwashing that he went through, that would be really, really interesting.
It is unfortunate that we find out that he has amnesia when she's like, it's too bad he has amnesia. Like, you could show, not tell.
Well, I mean, I kind of got the sense of that when he didn't recognize her at first.
Right.
That there was something wrong with his memory.
But he's got that amnesia that makes you really cold for some reason.
Well, he was remembering dying in space.
Yeah.
I suppose. I'd like to think that this is the flip side of Catra's own space madness. That this is sort of the... As Wufei and Hiro are much more like...
his mania.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wufei and Hiro are much more the, you know, let's just go murder some people. And Duo, I don't even know. Duo becomes increasingly the psychopath of the group, who is just sort of upbeat and fine with murdering everybody.
He is the king of hell.
No, he's the god of death, according to the show.
The god of death once again.
In that case, the god of death is the perkiest of the bunch.
Yep.
Well, he's also the ladies' man, if you notice. Like, he's also kind of like the flirt. Like, I feel like he has to be there to, like, polarize the team, like, to kind of balance it out. Cause, like, you gotta think, you got Wufei and Hiro murdering everything. Mm-hmm. Catra is like the innocent, sweet, never does anything wrong one. And Troa's just the emo baby standing off to the corners like, I'm fine with whatever. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's just fine. And then you've got Duo, who's like, he's got to be the happy one that he wants to be the one to bring everybody together.
Oh my God, you're describing the Spice Girls.
See? You get it.
I do.
I think Duo would be upset with that because clearly he's the front man for a metal band.
No, I think he'd be okay with being Ginger Spice.
You know, because here's the deal. Troa's definitely posh. He's definitely posh Spice.
Troa's totally posh.
Was Troa posh? Because Catra's the rich one.
Yeah, but yeah, I kind of think of Catra, I would call him baby Spice. No,
Catra's baby, you're right.
Catra's baby Spice, and that leaves Mel, the two Mels, and I think Wufei and Hiro are the two Mels.
Right.
Because they're both aggressive and murder everything.
Well, I think we've seen like Hiro like succeed super well at every sport he does, even though he really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. So like, he is sporty Spice.
Yep.
Like, he passed to himself and then slammed dunked.
And there is that famous incident in the 1997 tour when Sporty Spice had to repair her own leg using two wrenches. So.
Yep.
And how then, she was so also means- a PBR, a pro bull riding circuit champion when she broke that horse.
And then, and so that leaves Wufei as Scary Spice, as Mel B.
Which is well known to only fight people stronger than her. So I think that basically closes the loop on this.
I mean, yes. So the Gundam fighters are the Spice Girls.
I don't know how you're going to do it, Jared, but you need to make an AMV of Gundam Wing set to any Spice Girls song. It doesn't matter.
Do people still do AMVs?
Yes, AMVs they do. They are super a thing, actually. Matter of fact, a lot of anime conventions actually have competitions for the best AMV.
I remember them back in the day, but I really haven't like experienced one since the days of Evanescence.
Yes, because everybody was doing one to bring me to life.
Yes.
And my favorite one was the Utena one, because I love Utena.
No, it's actually, what's funny is they still do AMVs, but a lot of people do AMVs of certain shows like Future Diary, Another, Corpse Party, because they're really bloody, really gory, and they can use things like Evanescence to get that kind of atmosphere going. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, if you look up AMVs, look up like Corpse Party, Another, Higurashi When They Cry, Future Diary, any bloody, gory, nasty murder anime from recent year, and you'll find an emo baby version of it with some sort of song. Hell, I wouldn't even be surprised if there's an Evanescence song or two.
The last time I checked, I think YouTube took the AMV I made down.
No, you didn't have the proper disclaimers.
It was a movie trailer. I was young. I didn't know.
I learned it from my dad.
Oh man.
So I think that brings us to favorite part. So Spence, what was your favorite part of this episode?
Oh god, my favorite part. Oh, Noin says that the Gundam is a symbol of hope.
Yeah, because she says,
like, no, the Gundam is a symbol of the Saint Kingdom standing up to the man.
Like, and yeah. She contradicts herself. She says it's a symbol.
Yeah, she contradicts herself in the same sentence.
Yeah, because she says it's a symbol of hope. But you know, all these soldiers are only here because of the Gundam. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Well, because they're all the Trace faction guys, and Trace made it.
Yeah.
So they're sort of like, it's their thing now. It's new Trace.
I love how everyone's like, it's a symbol of hope, and it definitely looks like a devil.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, this robot devil is the symbol of hope.
So yeah, that's my favorite part.
Nice. Jared, how about you?
Well, overall, it's definitely the Zex tripping balls due to the Zero System sequence. But I did find it specifically hilarious that he has the hallucination of destroying Piecemillion. He's really freaked out about the fact that he might have done so. And then we cut back to Wufei essentially saying, "Oh, I'm going to fight you." And Zex is like, "No, we gotta find a piece here or whatever." And then Wufei begins swinging his spear above his head. He's not moving any closer. He's just swinging the spear above his head, and Zex immediately fires and clips the Piecemillion. Like, did you not just learn your hallucinated lesson, sir? Do not shoot at the spaceship.
No, he needs to see it again.
But fortunately, since there's only one person on the Piecemillion, no one was hurt. Yeah.
We did get, like, the Star Trek Next Generation shot of, like, the bridge shaking and them grabbing the controls. Like, Howard and the other guy.
I do like the idea that Zex hasn't learned the name of the only other person on the ship.
It's just the... He's like, Howard, how's that other guy doing? Oh, you mean John? He's great. Yeah, the other guy.
Yeah, his name is John.
All right, I'll remember that.
I can't recognize him because he's not wearing anything weird on his face.
Why is he not wearing epaulets? I told you, Howard. If he's going to support me, he needs epaulets, Howard.
I'm face blind. We all need masks or sunglasses or something.
No, we have a Google-style dress code here. And so, no, we will not have epaulets. I'm not bowing to the man.
We have these bellhop uniforms and we are going to use them.
Then he will be forever the other guy. I will not acknowledge him. Not without epaulets.
Somebody animate this.
Thanks, what's your favorite part?
Honestly, it has to be Noin and her contradiction. Like, because like she said, she literally contradicts herself in the same sentence. She's like, again, you pointed it out earlier, where she's like, we're all democratically elected, but I'm going to call you Captain, salute. And she's like, okay.
Yeah, and the best part of that is that they're like, well, I'm used to calling you Lieutenant. And she's like, no, not Lieutenant. And then they're like, well, what about Captain? Yeah, fine.
I'll take that promotion.
Better than promotion. Lieutenant. Like, thanks. I'm kind of rusty on my military ranks, but don't captains outrank lieutenants?
Unless, most services, yeah.
I mean, it just depends. Are your epaulets huge and amazing? Because I feel like if you are a lieutenant with amazing epaulets, you will eventually, in the Trey's military, outrank that captain and still be called lieutenant.
I do like the fact in that exchange that Hero's like, why did you let all those losers in? And she's like, because I don't want to die. We are going to get crushed.
Dude, and I'm like, oh, God. It's just... Like,
they're warm bodies. We need them.
And he's super mopey about having a massive death mech that entire sequence, which is hilarious.
Yeah, he does look up at it longingly when he's like, so why did you give me this thing, Trace? Like,
stupid mech, I didn't want it anyway. Anyway, Hugh, what was your favorite moment?
I think my favorite part was just Pagan throwing massive shade at Dermale. like Relina's like, oh, what are we going to do? Romanfeller's gonna crush us. And Pagan's just like, well, Dermale's in charge and he's a moron, so I'm sure we'll figure something out. There is no chance they'll be able to wipe us out. Because
I feel like Pagan is probably in regular communication with Dermale's butler. Like, I feel like they probably, you know, frequent the same forum and gripe about things.
Oh,
you
man,
know,
like
he follows the butler code and then he does everything that Relina needs. He anticipates all her needs and he, like, talks with her enemy's butlers and just does nothing but bitch and talk shade.
Yes. Yeah, he goes onto the Reddit of butler pages and
butler Reddit. It's called Serve It.
And his name is Put Upon One. I can't believe it. She still doesn't know what peace means.
If I have to clean this fucking Barbie mobile one more time,
why couldn't I have been hired by Dorothy?
And then Dorothy's butler is on there being like, this fucking gold bumblebee limo. It hurts my eyes to drive.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she's on butler like 17. Like, I'm pretty sure she murders them consistently.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta imagine her butler's like, you have no idea what that girl is into. No.
If I do not post on here on a weekly basis, assume I am dead. Tell my family I love them.
All counterpointed by old post by Lady Un just talking about how great Trace is.
I love serving my master, Trace. Shut up, Un! We know it's you!
How can you tell? I don't have my glasses on.
Username Trace for life.
Username Where are my glasses?
Password Rosewater.
Oh God!
Did I ever tell you about that time I shot that guy at when he was falling out of an airplane? Yes,
yes. God. Hey, did I tell you about the time I was a star softball pitcher? Yes, we saw the compact. God damn it! Oh man, her Relina's dad would have been on there secretly. His username would have been Make It So.
Yes.
We miss you, Riker Dad.
Oh, poor Riker Dad.
I feel like he would have at least lent some clarity to the plot, but...
I mean, with a crisp, clean beard and goatee like that, I mean, who wouldn't have?
And that powder gray suit.
You know what? I think that's why he had to die. Because he wasn't wearing epaulets.
He wasn't wearing a military uniform he designed himself.
Yeah.
Like a third world dictator.
And if you think about it, like, Relina immediately adopts the epaulets and my own type of uniform. Like, she immediately gets with the program.
Well, to be fair, we're living in a universe where you're lucky to survive the day with a suicide cult nearby, so.
Well, I do like the fact that after that meeting, Relina takes off her fancy coat and relaxes in her school uniform.
Well, she's taking the path of a lot of leaders and, you know, just limiting her decision making with her wardrobe so that she only has three things that she can wear. The epaulets uniform, the school uniform, and her blue party dress.
Which is AKA hero, come kill me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just be lucky if she's not wearing a Zuckerberg hoodie every episode.
Bruh. Honestly, if you think about it, she is kind of a cult leader. Like, she's gotten all these young, impressionable, rich girls to give her money to make this school, and she controls the information they learn while she secretly runs and builds an army beneath their feet. Like, I think Relina's a cult leader. I think she's probably believing in Scientology or something.
She's not quite sure what.
Peace-ish.
She doesn't know really what it is, but she's going for it.
Yes. So that wraps up episode 35 of Gundam Wing. Spence, plug yourself.
ResonantMoon.com. You find me on Facebook and gameschool.tsrpn.com.
Excellent. Jared, plug yourself.
You can find all my business over at Skinner.fm.
And Jason, plug yourself.
Yeah, you can find me doing the Horror Fest this month in October at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com.
And you can find all my business at HughJOvalm.com. And I do have a new reprint that's going to be out by the time this comes out in Quoth the Raven, an anthology of interpretations of Poe's work in the modern day. And you can find my story, The Montresor Method, in there. You can find all of our show notes and links over at NostalgiaPilots.com and follow us on Twitter at NostalgiaPilots. Yes.
Do it.
So until next time, we'll live with pride until the very end and take everybody with us.
Integrity.
Why did you even give me this podcast?
All evil that chooses to fight in outer space is my enemy.
Are you having trouble keeping up with the ebbs and flows of modern geekery? Is the real world holding you back from knowing what is happening in the geeky world? To answer these and other personal problems brought in by your friends, gaming group, and loved ones, Geek Radio Daily presents daily informational sessions brought to you by the wonderful Billy Flynn, the Flynnstress, and podcasting's Rich Siegfried. They contain such helpful segments as history, geek birthdays, box office results, the latest in DVD and Blu-ray, video game and comic releases. Why, they also have a weekly show hosted by the wonderful Billy Flynn and the Flynnstress, which includes interviews and commentary. And to make sure you are informed, Geek Radio Daily also provides you with your daily dose of geek news to make sure you know more than that jerk know-it-all Steve. Visit us at geekradiodaily.com. That's right, Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the weight. Now available in fine Corinthian leather.